Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 24, text number 10. That's 9. And this chapter is entitled The Renunciation of Kadama Muni. Yes, so this is text number 9. Tat Kadamashrama Padham.
Tat Kadamashrama Padham.
Sarasvacha Parishitam.
Sarasvacha Parishitam.
Swayambhu Sakham Rishibhi.
Swayambhu Sakham Rishibhi.
Marichyad bir habyayat.
Marichyad bir habyayat.
Tat kadanamashrama padham.
Tat kadanamashrama padham.
Sarasvacha parishritam.
Sarasvacha parishritam.
Swayambhu sakam rishipi.
Swayambhu sakam rishipi.
Marichyad bir habyayat.
Tat.
Kadama.
Kadama.
Of Kadama.
Of Kadama.
Ashramapadam.
Ashramapadam.
To the place of the hermitage.
To the place of the hermitage.
Sarasvatya.
Sarasvatya.
By the river Sarasvati.
By the river Sarasvati.
Parishritam.
Parishritam.
Surrounded.
Surrounded.
Swayambhu.
Swayambhu.
Brahma, the self-born.
Brahma, the self-born.
Sakam.
Sakam.
Along with.
Along with.
Rishibhi.
Rishibhi.
The sages.
The sages.
Marichi.
Marichi.
The great sage Marichi.
The great sage Marichi.
Adibhi.
Adibhi.
And others.
And others.
Abhyayat.
Abhyayat.
He came there.
He came there.
Brahma, the firstborn living being, went along with Marichi and other sages to the place of Kadama's hermitage, which was surrounded by the river Sarasvati. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Brahma is called Swayambhu because he is not born of any material father and mother. He is the first living creature and is born from the lotus which grows from the abdomen of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Garbhadaksha Vishnu. Therefore, he is called Svayambhu, self-born. I'll read the next verse because it explains a little bit more about the same. A little bit more about Lord Brahma. Text number 10. Bhagavantam param brahma satpenam sindas shatruhan. Tatva sankhyana vigyaptyai jatam vidvan ajasvarat. Maitreya continued, O killer of the enemy, the unborn Lord Brahma, who is almost independent in acquiring knowledge, could understand that a portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his quality of pure existence had appeared in the womb of Devahuti just to explain the complete state of knowledge known as Sankhya Yoga. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 15th chapter, it is stated that the Lord Himself is the compiler of Vedanta Sutra. And He is the perfect knower of Vedanta Sutra. Similarly, the Sankhya philosophy is compiled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His appearance as Kapila. There is an imitation Kapila who has a Sankhya philosophical system, but Kapila, the incarnation of God, is different from that Kapila. Kapila, the son of Kadama Muni, in his system of Sankhya philosophy, very explicitly explained not only the material world, but also the spiritual world. Brahma could understand this fact because he is Svarat, almost independent in receiving knowledge. He is called Svarat because he did not go to any school or college to learn, but learned everything from within. Because Brahma is the first living creature within this universe, he had no teacher. His teacher was the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, who is situated in the heart of every living creature. Brahma acquired knowledge directly from the Supreme Lord within the heart. Therefore, he is sometimes called Svarat and Ajna. Another important point is stated here. Satvin Amshina, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, he brings with him all his paraphernalia of Vaikuntha. Therefore, his name, his form, his quality, his paraphernalia, and his entourage all belong to the transcendental world. Real goodness is in the transcendental world. Here, in the material world, the quality of goodness is not pure. Goodness may exist, but there must also be some tinges of passion and ignorance. In the spiritual world, the unalloyed quality of goodness prevails. There, the quality of goodness is called Shuddhasattva, pure goodness. Another name for Shuddhasattva is Vasudev, that's with the little V, because God is born from Vasudev with the capital V. Another meaning is that when one is purely situated in the qualities of goodness, he can understand the form, name, quality, paraphernalia and entourage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word Amshina also indicates that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, appeared as Kapiladev in a portion of his portion. God expands either as Kala or as Amsha. Amsha means direct expansion and Kala means expansion of the expansion. There is no difference between the expansion of the expansion and the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly, as there is no difference between one candle and another. But still, the candle from which the others are lit is called the original. Krishna, therefore, is called Parabrahman, or the ultimate Godhead and cause of all causes. A little full stop with 8 legs. Not 6 legs. Om Agyanti Miranjasya Jananjana Salakaya Chakshuram Malitandhena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha. thank you. No, that's fine. Yeah. Fingers are a bit cold, but thank you very much. And the feet as well. So, this is an interesting part here. Of course, Lord Kapila is appearing from the womb of Devahuti as the son of Kadama Muni and Devahuti. And so Lord Brahma has appeared. It's significant that Lord Brahma is approaching Kapila Muni, Lord Kapila, in order to offer his respects and prayers and take his blessings, because he understands, of course, that Lord Kapila is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who instructed him within his heart. He is not different from Krishna, who originally instructed Lord Brahma from within his heart. So there is a. So here we see the proper precedent that if one is truly receiving inspiration from the Lord within the heart, they will approach the Supreme Lord, offer their respects, and accept their teachings. Not that the opposite tends to be the true, that tends to be the current fashion, that people feel that if we are instructed spiritually within the heart, we're getting divine inspiration. That means, what is the use for God? Because I am becoming divinely inspired like that. So, in other words, Brahma is proving that yes, if you're really divinely inspired, then you go to the temple, you offer your obeisances to Krishna, and then, you know, hear the Bhagavad Gita, chant Hare Krishna, then it is confirmed that the inner inspiration is there. Otherwise, what is that inspiration? What is that nonsense? And what is being inspired in? So that's you know, Brahma here, by his own actions, dispelling, you know, the vast ocean of sharks, you know, dangerous sharks and crocodiles in the ocean of philosophy. He is destroying them. So Lord Brahma, let's just look at that. Again, another thing that we see is that if someone is actually instructed and receives knowledge from within the heart, then that knowledge will be synonymous with the Vedic knowledge. That is another. So Lord Brahma received knowledge from within the heart. He was divinely inspired, and that knowledge, by that knowledge, he was able to speak the entire body of the Vedas. And furthermore, we see that not only is Brahma demonstrating that he is actually divinely inspired and therefore approaching Lord Kapila, but when Lord Kapila speaks, he confirms the exact knowledge which was inspired within the heart of Lord Brahma. So again, confirm and that. So if someone is feeling that they are divinely inspired and they're speaking something which is against the knowledge of the Vedas, then we would question that. And the Lord confirms when he appears himself the person who divinely inspires us, the super soul, when he speaks that Vedic knowledge. That is the knowledge which he will give within the heart, and when he speaks, he only speaks that transcendental knowledge of the Vedas. He does not confirm all the other nonsense philosophies which are outside the scope of the Vedas. So, of course, just to cut to the chase a little bit, in Kali Yuga, that would mean that one who's actually getting proper inspiration from the Lord will take interest in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, reading of the Bhagavad Gita, and performing Sankirtan in the Sankirtan movement. So that is, again, that is the confirmation that that inspiration of the Lord, that they are being inspired by the Lord. And so, just to tell a little personal history, is how this plays out. Before I met the devotees, so there's an example of how, you know, I experienced some inspiration by Krishna, which, you know, looking back, I can see, you know, it's definitely, you know, Krishna's giving some intelligence and guidance and, you know, directing, you know, directing, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita, that he actually directs the wanderings of all living beings. So, as a teenager, just being an ordinary Western teenager growing up in the 60s and 70s, there's a lot of parties, not much else. So I remember one time I was at a party, and I got to the point where I just knew that I was suffering. And, you know, I could understand that I'm causing myself so much trouble, you know, intoxication and, you know, just living this life, unrestrained life. And I was looking at all my friends at this party, and I thought, they're all suffering. Everyone's pretending they're happy, but I know these people, they're all suffering. I'm suffering. They're all suffering like that. And I felt very, very disenchanted with my whole life, you know, that was, you know, I didn't want it to go on for a moment longer, because I understood it was just completely a waste of time. So I was sitting there, and I wanted to, you know, send out a protest to pretty much, you know, I'm finished with you, you know, this sense gratification and, you know, all of this falsity. So I wanted to withdraw from the whole thing. So I thought, what I'll do as a, you know, a protest is I'll just, you know, pick out a book and I'll sit here and read, which you don't do. When you're at a party, you don't sit and read a book. So, you know, and I thought, and just to make the point, you know, obvious, I'm not just going to pick a little book and glance at it. I'm going to get the biggest book I can find and just really get into it. And so I reached into the library, and just pretty much the biggest book was just the one, just as you put your hand out, the biggest book was right there. And so had I been standing up, I might have taken a big book off the top. But from where I was, the biggest book was the one right there. So I was sitting there, and I pulled that out, and that was the Bhagavad Gita. It was Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. So Now the interesting thing, this is how you see Krishna's directing your wanderings. I was at this party was being thrown by an ex-girlfriend who I'd broken up with. I lived with her for 9 months. She had that book the entire time. I never ever saw it. And I probably looked in the, glanced at all the books, never paid any attention to it. It was only at that moment when I was completely disgusted with material existence, that practically it just, it was at a hand's reach, and I was inspired to grab it at that time. If I had read it earlier, I probably, but at that moment, at that exact moment, I read the Gita at that, not before. So it was the timing of, picking up the Gita and reading it was right down to the exact second to that it made an impact. And as soon as I started reading it, and my eyes were wandering a little bit across the page because I was a little bit intoxicated, but I knew this is what I was looking for, like that. So, but again, I've read that Bhagavad Gita, and after reading that Bhagavad Gita, I wanted to read something more by Prabhupada. Now at this point I still didn't relate. I didn't really know anything pretty much about the Hare Krishna movement. I may have seen them, but I didn't relate them as part of what connected with the books properly. That this was their library of literature, but I wanted to read something more from Prabhupada, and for some reason or another, in my mind, this pink book. Just, I remembered, some years back that my brother had a book with a pink cover. I never got to touch it. I never got to see it. He walked past with it. I said, "What's that book?" He said, "You won't be interested in it." And I never ever saw it again. And I thought to myself, I don't know why, because I never even saw the cover or anything. I thought, I wonder if that pink book has anything to do with this philosophy. And for some reason or another, I went home and I searched for that book. And I went through everything. My brother and I lived in the same bedroom. And, and I got under the bed and, through all the, there's boxes of old shoes and magazines and, comics and things. And sure enough, right in the back of the stuff that you just, don't want to... lazy to clean up. Looked there amongst all the shoes, this, that and the other. Pulled out that pink book. It was a Nectar Devotion. Flipped it over and there's a picture of Prabhupada and Radha Krishna. So, still to this day, I don't know. It was just Krishna's inspiration. You find that book, like that. That's it, somehow. And then I found the Nectar Devotion, I read that. About that time I started doing yoga. Now I pretty much knew, for different reasons I won't go into, that I was really wasting my time. I think some people have heard that story, right? I was still drinking before and after the yoga class and alcohol. So anyway, but the thing was, I realise now, is that it was Krishna's trick. Because I lived on the Mornington Peninsula, which is, the only time, I used to go to the city sometimes and go see a movie or something, but it was that yoga class, when it finished, I would sometimes go to the city, get a bite to eat and then go home. The class finished pretty much the same time the devotees used to start the kirtan. And that was Krishna's trick. And one time I was walking down the street and I saw the Hare Krishna kirtan, big kirtan with Ramaswami, who was a brahmachari then, leading. And they were distributing books and I started to get an understanding, these people. And between that, between the next week when I actually saw the devotees again in the kirtan, it was 1978. It was the Melbourne Cup, and I prayed to Krishna that if I could win some money on the Melbourne Cup, I would give him half the money. So you can see I'm reading the Gita, I'm getting a lot of realization. You know? I'll get to that point later. I just, you know, just we see the importance of associating with devotees. So anyway, I got second or something. I had about $12 and I thought, okay, Krishna, you're getting $6 of that. And then you help me, I'll help you. you know, I think I'm on a good thing here. You know, I'm on a winning streak. Krishna doing all right, I'm doing all right. So I went up to give the money to the devotees, thought I'll go and see the kirtan, which I really enjoyed last time, and I'll give them the money. Now, again, this is Krishna's inspiration, is that a devotee came up to me. I wasn't sure he was a devotee because he had a wig on. In those days, you couldn't ask people for money or even sell them anything, because if they knew you were Hare Krishna, they pretty much just wanted to kill you. but they certainly didn't want to give you money. They thought we were crazy. So he had a wig on. So they used to sort of, you know, walk around behind the kirtan party, and they'd try and, you know, they'd give out a feast card and ask for a donation. But you didn't quite know they were devotees. Anyway, I was looking at him and I sort of, you know, thought, this guy's got a wig on. Because the wigs were really bad wigs. In those days, I mean, this is going back in, you know, the 70s, you bought a wig for a man. There's not a lot of men's wigs around, especially for a young, you know, 20-year-old. They just look like a really bad, you know, extended toupee. But anyway, the thing was, when I saw this person, I had the feeling that I'd bumped into my very best friend that I've ever had. And I'm trying to, in my back of my mind, I'm trying to run through, where do I know this person? I was actually embarrassed. I was actually blushing a bit because I felt, God, if he realizes I can't remember his name or place him, and yet he's my best friend, in my mind, I'm trying to, you know, run through, and I just couldn't place him. But actually, you know, I literally walked into someone who, you know, I considered my absolute best friend. I knew this person intimately, like that. So that was another, it was, you know, there's some previous life. You know, you can understand there's some previous life. So Krishna had inspired me to, you know, it's meeting that person. Of all the Hare Krishnas to first talk to, it was that one. That one that somehow there's a connection from another life. And whatever he said, I would have accepted. And he said, why don't you come? Because when he gave me the feast card, I just immediately gave him the money. He was like really surprised because people just didn't give money to the Hare Krishna so quickly. It was like you have to, you know, con it out of him a little bit. You know. And do a change up. So anyway, he said, why don't you, you know, after we finish the kirtan, why don't you just jump in the van and come back to the temple? I said, all right. So I came back and never left. But, but you know, it was just, you know, showing that, you know, that Krishna did inspire and orchestrate a whole lot of different events through Prabhupada's books in order to, you know, bring me to Krishna consciousness like that. So, you know, here, You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, can we get a Bhagavad Gita? In chapter 10, look at that, Will. You're reading that same section. In chapter 10, verse number 11, Srila Prabhupada mentions chapter 10, verse 11 in the purport. He says, the modern philosophers think that without discriminating, one cannot have pure knowledge. For them, this answer is given by the Supreme Lord. And that's this verse that... to show them special mercy, I dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining that he says, you know, for the modern philosophers who think that without discriminating one cannot have pure knowledge, for them this answer is given by the Supreme Lord. Those who engage in pure devotional service, even though they be without sufficient education and even without sufficient knowledge of the Vedic principles, are still helped by the Supreme God. So, further down, Srila Prabhupada says, so I think also there's something similar in that in the previous verse, chapter 10, text number 10. These books have these little pages.
Yes.
No, that's all right. I got it now. Thank you. Because I have the big fingers that are always in the garden, so it's... here also, in the previous verse, Prabhupada says in the purport that a person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but still, if he is not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. the qualification is that a person always engages himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain him. So, you know, Krishna is destroying the concept that you know, just by the cultivation of knowledge, I mean, devotees, you know, they chant Hare Krishna, they read the Gita, they eat prasadam, just eating prasadam. And, you know, for a lot of the philosophers around the world, they think, well, these people are just eating prasadam, dancing, chanting Hare Krishna. What can they know? How can they have any pure knowledge? How can they, you know, advance in Krishna consciousness? But Krishna is saying, no, no, because I instruct them. You know, I instruct them within. I'll help them. so, I was obviously reading the Gita and the Nectar Devotion, and you know, I was starting to at least understand the essential points that we should serve the Supreme Lord, who is an eternal person, you know, with love and devotion. But of course. Krishna could see very clearly that I really, although I understood that, I didn't really know how to do it because I was in such a state of impurity I was acting according to my material desires while desiring to also engage in bhakti to Krishna. So, you know, that was... to give an example, that I did work at one stage, and not very often before I became a devotee, but I had one job, which I worked for 9 months, very proud of that. And I was a landscape gardener, because hippies didn't work very much. But one of the jobs we were doing, when you sort of... doing round a new home, you sort of then put a garden, you rake out all the rubble, you know, from the building and, you know, from the dirt, and you get a nice, you know, mixture of soil, and then you put a bit of grass seed in there and, you know, some trees like that. So, you know, as you're raking out all the rubble, you know, one of my jobs was to get that, put it in the wheelbarrow and then just tip it over the side, usually in the house next door. Do they still do that? Probably. I've been out to the western suburbs, they still seem to do that. But anyway, every time I would tip this wheelbarrow, I'd be thinking of the Gita. And the Gita says, you know, you should offer everything to Krishna. So, you know, I'd tip the wheelbarrow out, and I'd be going, there you go, Krishna. I'm offering everything to you. And I'd be thinking, I don't really know what you want with a wheelbarrow full of rubber. Well, I certainly don't want it. The boss doesn't want it. I don't think the neighbours want it too. They're getting it. But anyway, I didn't realise till actually after I become a devotee, even after some years later, it dawned on me that when I used to pick up my pay packet, I wasn't thinking then, here, Krishna, this is for you. That was for me for, you know, Friday, Saturday night out in the town. See? So, you know, I was, you know, so Krishna could understand. He can see. Okay, you want to do that, but you have no understanding what you're doing, you know. So he must have been, really having a good laugh. So at least I made God smile. They say if you can make God smile once in your life is perfect. So I think I made him smile. And because of that, he orchestrated, you come and see the devotees and you learn how to do bhakti properly. So so we're discussing here about being inspired by the Lord within. So that can happen, but it doesn't mean that a devotee... I understood that, yes, the Lord is inspiring me within, but, within certain parameters, that inspiration is there, not unlimitedly. That, Krishna doesn't want to continually be the person who is inspiring one, the sole source of instruction. Actually, he wants to give the credit to his devotees. Krishna actually wants to glorify his devotees, and therefore, he says, he wants to place someone who's sincere under the shelter of the devotees, and he wants the devotees to deliver them in Krishna consciousness. And in that way, Krishna gives the glory to his devotees. He doesn't want the credit himself. He wants to give it to Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati and the Acharyas and, you know, Rupa Goswami, like that. You take the glory like that. That's his love. He wants to see them, you know, get the credit. So although Krishna can inspire you, he wants to work through his devotees, so he will bring the one into the association of the devotees. And in that association, Krishna, through the devotees, will give one training in spiritual life where the mind and the senses become purified. Because it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the 6th chapter, text number 7, that for one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honour and dishonour are all the same. So when we have control of the mind and the senses, our ability to follow the directions of the super soul become increasingly our ability to follow the super soul, to perceive the super soul, to receive instruction from within, is concomitant with the control of the mind and the senses. Now, control of the mind and the senses means that, as Prabhupada says, it's not that one is 100% pure, but one is sincere. Sincere means that one may or may not be, you know, purified to different degrees. If one is sincere, it means one wants to become purified. One is not trying to cheat the system. But to the degree one is sincere and therefore becomes more and more purified in the association of the devotees by the process of devotional service, the ability to take inspiration in one's service, to literally, you know, hear the Lord speaking to one, is possible. To the degree we have insincerity or personal motivations, thank you very much. Thank you, sir. To the degree that we have personal motivations, to that degree that ability will diminish. So again, this comes to a particularly important point that when, how does that manifest for us as devotees? Now, we see that in the life of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada very nicely, perfectly epitomized the complementary nature of taking direction from the Lord and being fully directed by the devotees. So his spiritual master ordered him, you go to the West, you preach Krishna consciousness, and if you ever get money, print books. So Srila Prabhupada, his only desire was actually to follow that instruction. He was not thinking, my spiritual master did this, I'm going to do something new and better. Or, this one did this, you know, that is wonderful, but I'm going to do something more wonderful, something different like that. His only desire was, whatever the guru has instructed, I will execute that only. I have no other goal, no other desire, no other purpose, no other action in this world. Now that seems to be, you know, the mistake sometimes devotees make, especially me, is that we have the tendency to think that if I'm just following the instruction of senior devotees, how will anyone ever realize the, you know, wealth of inspiration I'm getting directly from the Lord within my heart, you know, the spiritual realizations like that. See? That unless I do something new and different, I'm not so much interested in following, you know, the devotees that come before me or serving them or doing what they want me to do. I want to establish, you know, my own great realizations by doing something new and wonderful and different. So that's the Maya. It's like when I went to the farm, I was on the farm between 1998 and 2002, so I was managing there. My main objective was to just, I just always in awe and appreciation of what the devotees had done there. You know, they'd actually created this nice farm, they had this, that, and they had a, you know, permaculture plan, you know, as a gokul. And I thought, the main thing that I did when I was on the farm was to clean it up. I thought, these devotees have done such a nice thing, but there was rubbish everywhere. There were cars, there were broken caravans, there was wire in all the paddocks, every single paddock. One of the bulls, Nandi, I don't know if you remember Nandi, died because they got the wire. Yeah, poisoned leg, killed the bull. So it was very dangerous, fire hazard. One day the CFA came to the farm, said this place is a complete fire hazard. And so, you know, burned off. So one of the main things I did, I took out tons and tons and tons of rubbish. I used to get people coming with trucks and just, you know, taking out tons and tons of rubbish like that, metal and this, that and the other. It was so much, you know, because every family that went there, pretty much when they left and all their junk remained in the paddocks here, there and everywhere like that. So, but, you know, it was just trying to serve those previous devotees. They also had a plan, you know, Gokul had this wonderful permaculture plan all drawn up. And, you know, so if I could just do what they'd already planned, you know. So I had no idea of doing something new and wonderful to show, well, you know, I'll do something like that. And one of the things, and this is how when you know, the realization I got, when just trying to please those previous devotees, Krishna inspires you to do something, you know, wonderful in devotional service. So we had this boy on the farm who was a woofer, Ezekiel, I think his name. And he came to me, I was trying to convince him. He was sort of teetering on the edge of it. He liked Krishna consciousness, especially farm life, but he felt that the farm had no future. And he was sort of on the verge of leaving, and I said to him, you can take any project you like. And I showed him all, you know, the plan for the farm, which is already established there before I went there. You take anything you like, think on it, come to me, whatever you want, that's your project, you take it. And you know. So he came to me a day or so later, he said, I'll do that project where you put in the 10,000 trees. So, you know, just below, you know, as you're driving up the farm, just to the left, running along the farm, we have the blue gums here, the blue gum forest. So I said, all right, that project is yours. So then he sort of looked at me and he said, I'd like to do it, but we have no money. We have no men. Because somehow or another, I wasn't really asking money from Melbourne, I was just earning it all. But we had, you know, it was very tight, especially in the early days. And we had basically an old tractor, you know, we had no fencing. And he left pretty much a day or two later. So within about a week after that, what happened was a company had ordered hundreds of thousands of blue gums, because a lot of the people around there were, you know, they're putting in blue gum plantations. They spend, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 on kangaroo fencing and, you know, rabbit proofing and irrigation and everything like that. And they put in a plantation of blue gums, like a medium hard wood, that worth thousands of dollars each tree. Someone ordered a lot, and that person went broke, and therefore the company had all these seedlings. So someone called me and said, oh Ganga, they're selling them So it was still to buy 10,000, which is what we got, would have been, I didn't have the money. I didn't have $5. So I went to him and I said, can I have them for free? I said, you know, I'm a Hare Krishna. We run a farm, I have no money. He said, all right, don't tell anyone, you can have them for free. He said, but you have to give me a deposit for the crates. I said, I don't have any money for a deposit. I can't, you know. He said, all right, you'll have to take them out of the crates and put them in something else and take. So we got a few children. My girls were about, you know, 9, 8 or 9, 10. Narayan, Tarini Rivers, you know. And we came there and we just, over the course of a couple of days, we got all those seedlings, took them out of the things and put them in, you know, cardboard boxes and took them back to the farm. So then we have to plant them as soon as possible. So then I thought to myself, and this is where, you know, Krishna is giving some direction, because we have more kangaroos on that property than perhaps the rest of Victoria, right? And what, so you have to put up kangaroo fencing, you know, so, and then rabbit proofing. And I thought, I can't do that. So I thought, if I just burn off all the rubbish so it's fireproof, but I let the grass grow, the kangaroos and the rabbits will have plenty to eat and it'll be harder for them to find the trees, and they'll get some shade from the sun. And so that's all I did. I just did that, and it actually worked. And the other thing was that we had had a drought for about 4 years, and when we put the trees in, you know, it was just a bunch of kids, a few woofers, and I got some people from land care, some uni students, and we formed a line about, you know, 10 long. Someone said to me the other day, how did you mark that out? And I said, we formed a line about 10 people wide, and we dug a hole and then we moved forward like that. We just went right through the paddock. And those trees actually took off, and that the drought broke. Krishna, he inspired the demi. You rain on those little, you know, seedlings, and they actually grew, you know, like that. And it didn't cost us anything. So what people would have ordinarily spent, you know, hundreds, you know, thousands of dollars on the trees, the fencing, the irrigation. We didn't put the irrigation in. We just depended on the rain, you know. And so for nothing, it got done. So that's, you know, Krishna's. But I always see that Krishna gave that special mercy, not because I wanted to do something, but because I just wanted to serve the devotees. That's how I see it. You know? So, you know, that it seems incompatible, but it's not. I remember another, just a very little story. When I was in New Zealand, I used to do the Easter show, the catering. And one day we had, you know, we were getting people, there's about 10, 15, 20 back, a queue from 10 a.m. in the morning to 10 a.m. at night. We just run out of food. And I was thinking to myself, I've got to get some, you know, something to sell to these people. And I went back to the restaurant, because I was running the restaurant, Copa's restaurant. I went back and all there was boxes and boxes of these cherry tomatoes. I thought, what do you do with a cherry tomato? And then I thought to myself, this is Krishna. He's given in a self-sourcing bakura. Yeah? What you do, you fry them up, the cherry tomatoes, and you make them into a bakura, and when you bite them, the sauce of the tomato comes in. It's a self-sourcing bakura. And I tell you, we made thousands of dollars. And that's all I had. I had flour, I had tomatoes. And people loved them. People thought, this is fantastic. And that, you see. So, but, you know, the point I'm making there is that Krishna, actually, when you have that desire to just serve the devotees, Krishna allows you to do something well. He inspires you. When God inspires you, you can bet you're going to do something good. If God inspires you, don't think something ordinary is going to happen. You're going to do something good. But he doesn't inspire devotees because, oh, I want to do something better than all the previous devotees. I want to be known as better than this one. Let them forget about them. You know, this is my time to shine like that. That's not where he gives inspiration. He gives inspiration when you have that desire, let me serve so many nice devotees. You know, this temple here, I remember Balaram, who, you know, previously used to, you know, he established the strict standard of deity worship which we have to today. You know, the Brishadam distribution, you know, the festivals, the Rath Yatra, all established by Balaram, and the member praise and everything. You know, still have great fondness, you know, for those devotees. We should never forget and always, you know, try to, you know, just continue what they've established. We come here to this temple, everything is pretty much there, and, you know, but if we have that mood that we look back at those devotees, oh, you've done this, and I've just come along, and the books are there, the temple's there, and this program is there. Let me just do a little service to that nice devotee who's done such wonderful service for Krishna. When you have that mood, Krishna becomes very pleased, and he inspires you within the heart like that. But that verse from the sixth chapter, that if the mind is impure, I want to do something for my pride. Forget the previous devotees. If they're getting attention, I'm getting less. If we have that mood, the inspiration is different. Like that. So Prabhupada, his only desire, his spiritual master said, you go to the West and preach. If you get money, you print books. And he, you know, so then when he came to the West, of course then he's in a situation where he's got all these, you know, they're not people from an Indian culture, Varnasram, all sorts of hippies and this one and that one, and he's got to present Krishna consciousness to them. Never been done before in the whole history of Brahma's day. He's got to somehow come up, how am I going to get these people to do that? So Krishna inspired him, not because he wanted to do something better than his guru, but because he actually wanted to serve them. And he did something, you know, incredible, you know, based upon that. So this, you know, here, taking lesson from Lord Brahma, that he is inspired by the Lord, and as Krishna says, he will do that for every devotee. You know, if that sincerity is there, he will do that for every single devotee at any stage of their devotion, not just Lord Brahma. You know, if and Prabhupada just, you know, sums it up, if they're sincere. And if that sincere means, I'm not working for myself, I'm working for Krishna's pleasure. That's sincere. Sincere means, I'd like to do something that pleases you, Krishna. What pleases you, Krishna? Oh, you serve my devotees, that'll please me. Like that. You serve yourself? Nah, not interested. Like that. And if we do that, we'll get unlimited inspiration from Krishna, just as Lord Rama did. On the other hand, persons who perform devotional service, committing all sorts of Vaishnava apparatus, then you would have to question you know, the validity of that inspiration within the hearts. I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Let's see if Krishna will inspire one good question.
Unrelated to your to the thrust of your class. Confusing still to me is this in the purports from Prabhupada writes another name for Sudasattva is Vasudeva. Because God is born from Vasudeva.
Yep. Good question. So just state the question more clearly and everyone can hear as well.
So we know Krishna is born from Vasudeva, which is a different spelling.
Because of the capital V in the... well, one has sometimes put with a long A as well. Is that what you mean? Yeah. Vasudeva. Yeah. Well, Krishna is known as Vasudeva with a long A, isn't it? Yeah, because he's the son of Vasudeva with a short A. Yeah, that's it? Question answered. All right. Okay. And... Sudhasattva. Another name for Sudhasattva is Vasudeva. They mean the same thing. Vasudeva is like the platform of the spiritual world. And so you can call that platform of the spiritual world Vasudeva, or you can call it Sudhasattva, which is a little bit more descriptive of that platform. It's pure goodness. And from that, God is born from that. In other words, when one reaches that platform, one can perceive the Supreme Person with his name, form, paraphernalia, and lila, and part of his lila is his instructions. So part of the lila of the Lord is actually speaking Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, giving the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's part of the Lord's lila. And when one is on the platform of the Sudhasattva, pure goodness, one can perceive Krishna, the lila of Krishna, understand the Bhagavad Gita, understand the Srimad Bhagavatam properly on that platform of the Sudhasattva. Yeah. Yeah. Was there another question? Does that answer that?
Yes, very much.
Mm, okay. Any other questions? Yep. Yeah, as we say, in a very practical way, just like we see with Srila Prabhupada, that you know, his spiritual master, who's the spiritual master, is considered, when we say the spiritual master, it's not just the initiating spiritual master, it's also the sannyas guru, you know, the shiksha guru, you know. So the spiritual master is considered to be the manifestation of the super soul. Not the super soul, but his representative that we can speak to, you know, face to face. So therefore, if we're being inspired by the super soul, then, you know, we can that what the super soul is saying is not different from what the spiritual masters are saying. Vande ham Shri Gurun, Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha. Guru, we offer in plural. So, if one is hearing the super soul, then there is no conflict between what one is doing to serve the spiritual master. If there is a conflict, you know, and as I say, spiritual master in general also just includes senior Vaishnavas. You know, this we learned from the disciples' course. You know, this is the strength of ISKCON, is that we have, you know, many gurus on various levels, but it's that abundance of spiritual authorities and experts and different that make ISKCON strong. Like that. And when we are not in conflict, then we are getting inspiration from the super soul. And when we're able to execute their instructions very intelligently, then you know, we're getting instructions. So it's that intelligence, or buddhi yoga. If we're doing something very foolishly in Krishna consciousness, so the spiritual master has asked us to do something, and we're doing it in a very foolish way, without good intelligence, then, you know, that's when we're not really getting listening to the super soul. In other words, the spiritual master is asking us to do something, and we're doing that very intelligently. Spiritual master, as I said, initiating gurus, shiksha gurus, like that, they're pleased. They think, this boy, I asked them to do that, and they did it so nicely, very nicely. And sometimes, as we see with Hanuman, that a person can do not just to execute what has been asked to do, to maintain something that's already established, but sometimes the Lord will allow someone to do a little more. And we see with Srila Prabhupada, he was asked to preach in the West. See? By such an intelligent disciple, so inspired, he then went back to India and preached there as well. And united to the two worlds. See, he did something more. He executed the spiritual master's order to the fullest extent, where then he was capable of doing something more. We don't generally do something more if we haven't done what we've first been asked. More comes after the, you know, the first thing. So, you know, you see with Hanuman, he had a mission. You find Sita. He found Sita. Not that he destroyed, you know, Lanka, and then he goes back to Ram. Oh, you destroyed Lanka. Where's Sita? I don't know. Could be under a pile of bricks that I smashed to pieces. I don't know. You know, the more comes later. Just like, again, mostly, you know, what I did on the farm was to establish what, you know, was already established. But one time I asked Ramai Swami, I said, I'd like to do something new that hasn't really been done. I said, I'd like to start the retreats. And he said to me, you can't do that, Ganga. I said, why not? He said, you don't have any money and any manpower, you know, it's a common theme there. And I said, I'll start with what I got. Is that okay? He said, all right. So there you go. And that's what I did. I started I invited people that weren't going to criticize too much the bad state of the ashrams down the bottom, and the fact that I was cooking for them, and, you know, there was about half a dozen people, and, you know, we looked after them to the best. But from the money I earned that, then I bought all sorts of different plates, and from the money we did from future retreats, I kept just putting the money back, and then gradually, you know, we have a whole different thing now. But, you know, so, you know, I've got to do, you know, one little thing, that new thing. But I did that after I cleaned up the place. Because what's the use inviting guests to the farm? Yeah, let's have a little tour. There's a rubbish dump in this paddock, there's a rubbish dump in that paddock, and there's this old broken down car over here. First do, you know, what's required, and then if there's something more, then you qualify. Krishna will give that inspiration. Yeah. Any other questions? Oh, part and parcel. Well, the living entity is the part, but as Krishna says in the Ishupanishad, that everything that emanates from the Supreme Lord is complete and perfect in itself. So although it's a part, usually when you think of a part, oh, something's broken off, you know, but it's a parcel, it's complete. Yeah, there's not something broken or, you know, little bits and pieces. It's a complete parcel. Everything is there. Spirit soul. So we are Krishna created us perfectly that we can have our own separate existence from Krishna independently. Like that. It's an illusory existence, but if we choose to live that, you know, forget Krishna, we can live in that, you know, we can go against Krishna. We can say, Krishna, you know, I'll be in the spiritual world, we can go to the material world, I'm going to be Krishna. You know, so we have such facility that we can, you know, foolishly act independently because we're, you know, we're complete. I mean, therefore, he's given us the full capacity for love. By giving us independence, he gives us a full capacity for love, because love means voluntarily you offer your love to someone. There's no force. You do it naturally. If the independence is not there, and as a living entity, we are forced to do everything because he controls the energy and we have no choice, then we can never love. So therefore, we're a complete parcel because we have the capacity to love, which means we have independence. So, you know, we're a part, but perfectly, and every living entity has their own unique, individual way to increase the transcendental bliss of the Supreme Lord. I love that thought. You know. each and every one of us. You know, sometimes when you know, sometimes people you know get a little critical or you know neglectful or you know want you to disappear. You know, you meditate upon that. That Krishna made me in such a way, somewhere, which I, you know, dormantly, I have a unique ability that no other spiritual soul has to increase the pleasure of Krishna. Like that. It's such a wonderful meditation. Like that. So therefore we're complete. Part and parcel. Any other questions? Jai, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.